It's official, fellas. The Lupe and Roy Show is now on Patreon. We have three different membership levels designed directly for fans of the show, providing a space for bonus content, priority shoutouts, and responses to your questions. Plus, we got perks like discounts, merch, and early access to news and announcements. If you are listening or watching right now, go check it out at www.patreon.com/LupeAndRoyce. That's Patreon, patreon.com/LupeAndRoyce.
Previously on the Lupe and Royce Show.
I hate fruits in cake. Like a strawberry cake. That's disgusting.
How about strawberry shortcake?
That's the same thing, man.
No.
It's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing.
Strawberry shortcake is it's like a funnel cake, and then it's strawberries on top with whipped cream. It's actually a strawberry.
Wait, now, do you put milk in there?
Compote?
Royce is finna say a word that he used in a rap before.
Oh.
Come on.
No,
Royce.
I don't know if I use the right word. I was hoping we can just
skip over that.
I was hoping we could just skim right over that.
The Lupe and Royce Show is a Say What Media production.
That was pretty good.
Yo, what up? This is Lupe Fiasco, and you're tuned in to the Lupe and Royce Show. That's right. You're not getting some random factoid. You're just getting some raw promotion. This is the Lupe and Royce Show. Welcome back, nigga.
What up, though? This is Royce the 5'9". Yo, I represent Detroit. Abandoned houses. You know what I mean? Doors stolen off the house. Porch gone. Pit bull on the grass. You know what I'm saying? Dilapidated real estate. I don't know. I'm just trying to top Lupe's intro.
All I did was.
But he's got to go. Your turn, Tom.
Hey, this is Tom Frank. I'm just the regular guy who represents all of you, the people. That's who I am.
No, you don't.
I represent the people.
Here you go.
No, you don't.
I do. You guys are the elite. I'm just.
You have merchandise making capabilities in your garage. You're not a regular guy.
I do. I haven't made a t-shirt in a while.
I wish you would, because we want to get paid again.
Again. Let's make sure that's a key point.
Listen, man, you are like this is something. You are like this is a privilege to get paid for doing the job.
When did we get
paid? That's what it's supposed to be, just in case you forgot.
When did we get paid?
Oh, I wasn't aware of this.
I'm sorry. Did I miss something? When did we get paid?
Oh, no. Just Lupe and I got paid. You haven't gotten paid yet.
Oh, okay.
You're going to get enough playing with killers. You're going to get enough time.
Oh, believe me.
You're going to get enough playing with killers.
I paid the Detroit guy first.
I'm wild like the Taliban.
He's a little scarier. Hey, well, we should tell people we're live on Patreon. We're building a real community there. You know,
we should. Wait. Is that how you're gonna segue into the Patreon? You just supposed to be like, shout out to all our patrons. You know what I'm saying? Over there that's supporting us. We appreciate it. We're building a dope ass community over there on Patreon. So come and be a part, man. Come support. You get behind the scenes footage. Dope little things that you don't get here on the regular podcast and some of those dope segments that we would do on the podcast before. Guess what? Paywall. You know what I'm saying? You're going to have to pay to see that. You know, but not much. You know what I'm saying? It's just a few dollars. A little twos and fews. A little pocket change while you come over there and holler at your boys. But yeah, shout out to everybody.
Lou going to charge you. I'm not going to charge you. I would do it for free. He gonna charge you,
but we're
sorry,
team.
I can't stop him.
So if I charge you, get
I want
too.
My cut, but I'm not charging him.
It's the team. I'm gonna give away some t-shirts too. I'm gonna start making some t-shirts again.
Not free ones, right?
Yeah, not free.
No. I mean, you know, you get the special.
Ooh, Tom, you keep
playing
with
Kittles.
You gonna learn
a couple quick shout outs. I like to shout out some people because you guys, you know, you thank people, but I know people.
Bruh, Bruce, just do it.
Bruce, Gabrielle. Simba Jackson, Tony B.
Hold up, wait.
Look at his eyes, y'all.
Look at his eyes. You see how he darts away to look at the screen? He's not recalling from his memory where y'all should be in his heart. He's reading y'all names off a screen like a bastard. But so you just gotta give it to him straight time. Y'all know these people, but we appreciate them and we will learn them over time. Say the names again.
Tony B.
Simba.
Gabriella. We got some good people.
Some good names right there.
Gabriella, that's a girl.
That is a girl. We got some females too.
Finally.
We got girls?
Yeah. I think they come from me. I think you guys draw the guys. I draw the girls.
Oh, Royce, you owe me. You owe me at least $20. Oh, well, you got to deduct $20 from what I owe you.
Why?
Because I heard Normally, I don't listen to the podcast because I think it's a terrible show. But
I think it's dope. Mm-hmm. Don't say that.
But I listened to it the other day to the end, and it was a lady on there. Shout to that lady. I can't remember her name. But she was like, man, Lupe. She like, Lupe, I love you, appreciate you. And man, I just want to thank you for putting me up on Rush 5-9. I ain't know who it was, but he was on there with you. So then I checked him out, and I like, man, that man can rap right here, Jack. So Lupe, thank you for putting me up on Rush 5-9. So look, man, I got you some streams the other day.
So he owes you $20.
You're welcome.
Thank you, man. I needed those streams.
That's all it's about. It's about reciprocity, that's all.
Yeah, I feel like reciprocity was collected that day. I felt it, those streams, man. You know, I felt it pad in my bank account. It was like
now, yo, before we get into our featured guest,
hold on, Tom. Real talk though, for real. If you are our fans of the Lupe and Royce show and you don't know who Lupe is, or you don't know who Royce is, and you just come in for each you on here because of
just
me.
Coming for Tom.
Or you on here because of Royce. Check out our music, man. Royce is one of the dopest MCs. He's fresh off a Grammy nominated album called The Cool. And he's hit you with great songs such as Kick Push. Jay-Z Executive Juice's first album. So make sure y'all check out Royce the 5'9" and his greatest hits package. You know what I'm saying? And while you're at it, Royce, do me.
Yeah, while you're at it, check out Lupe Fiasco. He's got a classic called Allegory, executive produced by Nas, calling him the best rapper ever. And his album is actually executive produced by Nas, calling him the best rapper ever on Drink Champs. That's a first ever in the history. You know what I'm saying? And you name it, you know, Grammy, all the awards you can think of, huge hit records, performing in arenas, dating really cool chicks.
All right, now stop.
Swords.
All right, stop.
I mean, you said go.
You went too far.
Don't go?
Yeah, you're going way too far.
You said go.
You're going way too far. Oh. So make sure y'all check out my music, Lupe Fiasco. It's Royce the 5'9's music. We do great music in addition to this podcast. So, all right. Now, Tom, who we got today?
Yes.
Oh, you got a birthday. We got birthdays. Oh, I got a birthday. I got a birthday. Happy birthday to Aisha Jaco, my sister. Is that the birthday you're going to give?
That's what I was.
My man, yeah, go on, take over. Go on, take over.
No, it's your sister.
Go on.
I saw you posted something very nice about her, so I wanted to personally wish her a happy birthday too. She's the better half of the Jaco family.
Don't talk about her like that. She's a saint.
She is a saint.
Let him talk about her.
He took a shot at me to build her up, which is real petty, but it's cool.
You're listening to the Lupe and Royce show with Lupe Fiasco, Royce the 5'9", and Tom Frank.
Time to give a little shout out to our sponsor, BetterHelp.
I don't know if you caught this, Tom, but we had a dude from Cali call in the hotline a couple weeks ago to rave. I mean, he just couldn't shut up about BetterHelp after hearing about it right here on this show.
All right. By all means, please share some choice quotes from the voicemail.
Okay. First of all, Sean from California called you the coolest colonizer at the cookout. That the CCC or the CC, the coolest colonizer at the cookout.
I was thinking more the parts about BetterHelp.
Okay. So not the insults and the low blows. Okay, gotcha. Okay, first he says, it blew my mind when I heard your first ad for BetterHelp. Guess he didn't realize we were into that sort of thing. Then he says, I've been using BetterHelp for 3 or 4 months now and I love it. It's amazing. I'm on my third therapist. You got to find the right one for you. And I feel like I have. I feel like I've got a better quality of life now. And it's only going up from here. That's optimism is what that's called, Tom.
That is a straight up real endorsement right there. We can't make this up, people.
All right. Y'all know the drill. BetterHelp provides professional counseling in a safe and private online environment. We recommend it because it's convenient, professional, affordable, and anything you share with our counselor is on a hush hush.
Get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at BetterHelp.com/Lupe and Royce.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Lupe and Royce.
You're listening to the Lupe and Royce show with Lupe Fiasco, Royce the 5'9", and Tom Frank.
We we're going to bring on a guest today, and we're going to continue our conversation about religion that you so eloquently started.
Oh, are we having somebody on here to be would like to be educated by us?
We are going to get educated. We have Father James Rodriguez joining us from St. Lima in Queens, New York. And the good father, he reached out to us after our conversation last week and or a couple weeks ago. And he wanted to dive in on this.
Lupe just told me before we started recording that it's always his pleasure to be able to teach. So anything you want to know,
First of all, I'm not calling you father. I'm going to call you Pops, because I think that's a little bit cooler. Pops Rodriguez.
All right.
It's all Poppy Rodriguez.
I'll take it.
Where the chain at, man? Where's the chain?
No chain for me.
Let's see what the chain is looking like. Come on now.
No chain for me.
I done seen some Greek Orthodox chains, right? Now, I'm not saying you Greek Orthodox, but I've seen some Greek Orthodox chains, and them chains, some dope chains, man.
They got the bling and the beards, too. Yeah.
The bling is crazy. The bling is crazy on the Greek Orthodox side. What's up, Father Rodriguez? Welcome to the Lupe and Roy Show. How you feeling?
Thanks so much. I'm good. I'm a little starstruck, to be honest. In the email I sent Tom, I was saying how I'm a big fan of both of you guys. Tom, too, since I started watching the pod. And I'm just happy that we're able to talk a little bit.
How long have you been in the clergy?
13 years.
And a part of that. Wow.
Yeah, just.
What was that process?
Just last week.
Clergy. Yeah.
Just last week, I turned 13. Yeah. I've been in Queens my whole priesthood. My first parish was in Astoria. And then I taught for a little while in one of our high schools. Did some counseling work. And now I'm the pastor here at St. Rose.
What is the denomination of Christianity that you represent?
Roman Catholic.
The Romans.
Yeah.
You ever been to Rome, yeah. Tom? Tom, you ever been to Rome?
I've never been to Rome, but I am a Roman Catholic.
A lot of pizza there. Pizza and the mafia.
A lot of pizza and pasta.
Yeah.
Delicious pizza, yeah.
And the Pope.
I've never been to Rome. I've always wanted to go to Rome.
It's beautiful.
So now we got deep into the story, and we looked at it as from the perspective of a story of Jesus Christ and the impact that story has had on culture and had on kids specifically in modern times. And you know, I think we had a little bit about a debate on if he were Jesus, if he wouldn't have died, and if he would have actually stayed and the good he could have done over the next 50, let's say, years, or maybe not that many, 30 some extra years he would have had on his life. Now, my side of that is that he had to die, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole point of the entire religion.
Yeah, and you know, this picks up on Old Testament themes of temple sacrifice. You know, Jesus is the Lamb of God. You know, so just as the Lamb was sacrificed as expiation for sins, Jesus is that quintessential sacrifice. He gives it all. You know, so yeah, you're right. He had to die.
Was it foreshadowed in the Old Testament that he would die in the New Testament?
Here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go. Let me crack these knuckles.
I want to hear his answer very clearly. What was that?
The answer is yes, but it's more complicated than that, because there are themes all throughout the Old Testament that get picked up and realized or fleshed out more in the New, you know, especially in Matthew's Gospel. If you want to read, there's a lot of quotations there from the Old Testament. Matthew himself was Jewish. Matthew was writing predominantly to a Jewish community, Jewish converts to Christianity. And so he picks up on a lot of the themes of the foreshadowing, as you said, the prophecy.
Father Rodriguez, Jesus being sacrificed, would you say that that's for the greater good or for the greatest good? And is there a difference between greater good and greatest good? The reason why I'm asking is because a fan said that and we think he's crazy.
No, you think he's crazy.
Yeah, I definitely
think.
Me and Lou think he's crazy.
Me and Royce.
I think what the fan was picking up on there is, you know, we were talking about the physical good that our Lord did, you know, feeding the sick, feeding the hungry, healing the sick, even raising Lazarus from the dead. That's the greater good, right? But when we talk about the greatest good, we're talking about spiritual reality, our salvation, life beyond this life, satisfying hunger beyond food, you know, healing the sickness of sin, which is worse than physical sickness. You know, I think that's what that fan might have been trying to get at there.
Right. So here's my piece, Father Rodriguez. I study religion and multiple religions deeply. I was born Muslim. Wasn't necessarily raised Muslim. So I went to church, went to the mosque. Recently just been studying a bunch of Eastern religions and stuff like that. And did a real deep dive into kind of the Old Testament and the New Testament as well. And I approach religion with a respect for the faith aspect of it, which the faith and the hermeneutics of it, like the interpretive sciences of it. And like you mentioned, there's a lot of different themes and narratives and ideas and concepts that float around in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. And they could be interpreted in various ways. Some people get really loose and fast with the interpretation. Some people don't interpret at all, right? It's just that, is it historically accurate? Is there evidence to prove it? If it's not, then you know, I can't deal with it. I have to kind of deal with only things that I can find proof for and stuff like that. So when Tom brought up this thing about it was foreshadowed in the Old Testament, there's a few stories in the Old Testament where there is a sense, and this happens in Islam too, because there's a narrative in Islam that the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, was foreshadowed in the Bible, right? And people go back to that kind of verse in the Bible, and they say, oh, that mountain is really just a metaphor for Muhammad, and then it's this and it's that. And I see that, and you'll see Christians argue like, nah, that is this particular mountain, or even that whole section is something that's considered to be apocrypha, or it's not really particularly canon that the core of the religion or any of the denominations place any real kind of emphasis on. So it's almost kind of like people cherry pick to find something that makes their particular point of view make sense. And so when I apply that type of logic, right, that type of hermeneutical logic to even these differences or relationships between the Old Testament and New Testament, it's the same kind of piece. So you'll study a piece from a Christian will say that this particular verse from the Old Testament is talking about Jesus, right? And a Jew will say, no, it's not. You know, it's talking about this particular person, or it's talking about that. But it's definitely not talking about Jesus, right? And it relates to that kind of the coming of the Messiah and all these different things. There is the messianic, and this, Tom, just so you know, there is the messianic prophecies that are in like interlaced into the Old Testament and in the Jewish religion. That's real, right? But people don't believe it's Jesus. Jews don't believe it's Jesus. And you have multiple messiahs, even during the time of Jesus, right? A lot of people were claiming to be Messiah in the second coming and this, that, and the third, trying to find or because there are certain like signs or certain actions, right, that the Messiah would have or represent, and then they would be signaled as the Messiah. So yeah, all kinds of people trying to come out to be the Messiah. And even after Jesus, even into modern times, even into kind of medieval times, you had tons of people coming out, putting themselves up as the Messiah, and they have followers, right? So it wasn't just, you have followings within Judaism that were just as impactful, even way more massive than Christianity, just in Judaism, dealing with the Messiah that turned out to be either a false Messiah, or you had another group, a rival group, or a more kind of a traditionalist group shutting that person's movement down, or in some cases killing those people, bringing them up on trial, similar to Jesus. So for me, and it's not to, again, not to overly bash the religion, but when you look at religion in its entirety, even in Christianity or just Judaism itself, they're still going. And so even that story of Jesus, you see it represented in Judaism like multiple times, not just one time. And the question begs was, well, what was so special about the Jesus piece? And then again, where's the evidence to make that, you know, the one that everybody should be sticking to? And then coming back to where we brought it up was, you know, what aspects of the Jesus narrative are problematic for kind of today's circumstances and the way people deal with things today, settling upon that idea of the greater good versus the greatest good. right? The greater good you can touch, you can see. The greatest good is no one knows.
I don't know if I'd say no one knows. You know, it is mysterious for sure. And it's not a question of empirical evidence or formula that you could follow, because that's not faith, you know. Faith requires a leap. It requires a decision, like love, you know. And so when we talk about that greatest good, the idea of salvation, and Jesus particularly as the Messiah, not just one among others, you know, what we're saying is there's something different about him. You know, you're absolutely right. There are lots of figures throughout the Old Testament. And even to this day, I remember I used to go to a Russian Jewish barber, and he had this big poster in the back of their religious leader, and it said Moshiach, right, which is Messiah. It means anointed one, right? It means their leader. It means the savior, maybe with a lowercase s. You know, but when we talk about Jesus, we're talking about this universal savior, God himself made flesh, you know. And I think part of the movements that you were talking about in the early church with, you know, you had people who considered themselves messiahs and who had followers. I mean, even to the present day, it is recent as David Koresh, you know, and other people like him. You know, you've always had charismatic figures who had followings. But all of that was here. All of that was earthly, that horizontal, right? Jesus's whole, what he came to give us is transcendent.
But back to your point, though, like anybody who reads the Bible, whether it's the Old Testament or the New Testament, every piece of that is an interpretation, right? Like you're looking for facts, but whether it's a mountain or it's a metaphor for something else, like that's all of religion is built on that. Like there is no real facts.
No, there's facts.
Is there? I mean,
yeah, there's archaeological evidence. There's factual evidence in the sense that it's supported in literature or archaeology outside of the religion that presents it as like fact, right? So there's like you'll see something that, you know, the Jews will say something or the Christians will say something, but it's backed up by like the Babylonians, or it's backed up by the Romans, or it's backed up by the Greeks, or it's backed up by the Egyptians, or it's backed up by this and backed up by that. So there are what is considered to be actual history in aspects of the Bible. It's the same thing in the Quran, same thing in most holy books. There is it lives on a certain level of objectivity, right? Where, you know, you can still interpret objectivity, but it's a difference when you can actually point to where that temple was or where that particular battle took place, or if that particular king actually existed, if that war actually was fought, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that's different, especially to what the father is saying, where some of these spiritual, mystical pieces, there's nothing you can really say about it. And I think that's one of the genius strokes of religion is that there's no way to really prove it. Right. But it still has value. It still has, you know, it comes back into this world and hopefully creating better individuals to do good things in this greater part of the situation. But at the same time, too, it also can create monsters. Right. It can also create like you mentioned, the David Koresh's and the other kind of messianic figures and the cult leaders and stuff like that in all religions. And I think, you know, I think that's what the Jesus story can do. I think that the Jesus story can create good people who build hospitals. And I think it also can create, you know, monsters. And I think there's something to, and this is why we brought it up in the last episode. If you all haven't heard the last episode, Jesus, make sure you go check it out. It's kind of like a continuation of that conversation so we could be on the same page. The issue wasn't whether the Jesus story was real or not. You know, it wasn't whether the religion was real or not, or valid or not. It's the way that the story is being interpreted and used today by folks who definitely aren't Jesus, right? Who definitely aren't the Messiah, who definitely aren't kind of religious folks, who definitely aren't like that. And then with every story, there's people who are going to interpret it and use it, exploit it, abuse it in ways that can't be accounted for in a religious context. So there's something about, you know, people who are just willing to sacrifice themselves in the face of, you know, in spite of like the good that they bring, So I talk people out of suicide all the time, right? That's something I've become really good at, right? And it's at a certain point, you have to kind of ground them in this world, right? Like ground them in what they're capable of doing. Even the most basic functionality, remind them that they're people who don't have hands, who don't have feet, right? And if you're gonna kill yourself, fine. But why don't you donate your hands and your feet, you know, to this person for a little while? You know, why don't you go to the grocery store for this person, or why don't you go join Peace Corps or Goodwill or something like that, just for a little bit of time, right? To get the most use out of it. And that way, when you go, you know, at least that's one more person that come to the funeral, you know, and give you a good eulogy or bring some flowers or do whatever it may be. So I think there's something to, and I'll end on this, is like that story of Jesus is so powerful. It's so massive. It's in every religion. You can't escape it, right? There's Buddhists claiming to have Jesus, right? That he went all the way to India. Like, so, and Hindus, there's a whole concept around Jesus. And I think that there needs to be a deeper understanding and a more intentional, not just kind of ad hoc given to you, put on a Jesus chain, you know, put a cross up in your house and, you know, like put a insignia up on your windshield, et cetera, or to bash it haphazardly from a non-Christian point of view. Like, that story needs to be understood and interpreted in a more meaningful way to take into consideration what are some of the unforeseen consequences of having that story just out in the world unregulated like that.
Yeah, you know, we're talking at the end of the day about the Word of God, you know, and you guys as artists, you know, you not only make your living, but you inspire people by your words. I mean, I know who you are because of your words, beautiful words too. You guys have made some of the best music I've ever heard. And when Jesus, as the Word of God, right, the one in whom God says everything he has to say, that requires engagement, right? That can't be an abstract, right? Just like your lyrics can't be an abstract thing. The listener has to engage with them, and then the listener can be inspired, like I have, you know. So I think when it comes to Jesus, even as just a historical figure, you know, we have to really engage with what he said and what he did and take that seriously. You know, you're right. A lot of people either just, you know, don't engage and accept it as such. Other people blindly bash it, you know, like you said, and both are kind of extremes that we should avoid. You know, Jesus almost requires friendship.
So back to your statement about fact, though, this has me thinking now. The Bible is actually brilliant in the fact that it's four different gospels that are basically telling the story from four different perspectives, which in your way then is creating fact, because it's four different people kind of creating, and that's only the four that are in the Bible, right? I mean, there are actually more gospels, or tell me if I'm wrong about this, but aren't there more gospels out there that were just not part of the actual Bible?
Yes and no. There were writings at the time about Jesus, and they are called gospels because of that. You know, they're kind of loose attempts at biography, but the four gospels that we have are the canonical gospels, right? Those are the gospels that the church, hundreds of years after it was written, assembled and agreed on through prayer and through their own experience and their own teaching, because these guys were disciples of the apostles. And so they all agreed that these four were the official biographies, right? The other gospels have some really strange things, and I don't mean that simply as a judgmental thing, but they are just things that are incoherent with the four canonical gospels. Yeah, so they're good from a historical perspective to see what people were saying at the time and what people were thinking about, but they don't fit. You know, they're not really authoritative.
So you got to understand something, Tom. Like, it was different groups of people practicing their versions of Christianity, or even their versions of kind of like a neo-Judaism, which you would call Christianity today. But Christianity is kind of like a new word, right? Like the and it's too much of a generalization, when you take it back to the times, like in the times in which it was practicing, you might have this one group who don't believe that Jesus is God, but they believe he's the Messiah, right? Then you have another group that believes Jesus is God and the Messiah, right? You have another group that just different details and different kind of calibrations of how they practice the religion, literally how they practice it, you know, what things carry over, what things they kept. And so you had these things, these heresies, right? And so you had certain groups who were just like in a dominant position, right? Who looked at something that they didn't necessarily agree with to the father's kind of point. It was incoherent with a certain practice. They thought it was strange. They thought it was weird. And so in most extreme cases, they thought it was blasphemous. All kind of Christians, right? All kind of, you know, operating under the same kind of principles, but just different ways that they, either because of their history, the religion that they came from, the place and time in the world that they lived and existed, what they were facing. And again, when you have something as multifaceted as the story of Jesus or that story of the Bible itself, it can show many faces to many different people. You know, one face, it might be a kind face. Another face, it might be a struggling face. Another might be a happy thing. And that's like you have these different kind of incarnations of Buddha. The starving Buddha, the happy Buddha, the smiling Buddha, this Buddha, the meditative Buddha, blah, blah, blah. Same thing happening in kind of early days of Christendom. And then it takes a massive kind of powerful force, political force, to say, you know what, we need to get everybody on the same page, right? And so for a few hundred years, I would say, you had this kind of that occurred, right? We're going to get everybody kind of at least in the same page. We're going to at least identify the heresies, put them in their places, let them exile, let them practice, but create our own situations and move along. And that still happens to this day. You know, so Christianity is constantly evolving, coming to terms with itself, splitting and breaking apart. Even, you know, the father here, being a Roman Catholic versus being, you know, a Coptic Christian or being Eastern Orthodox or Syrian Apostolic or being this or being that. It's different ways that the things were kind of put together. And so there are certain books, even in the, if I'm not mistaken, Father, correct me if I'm wrong. There's books that are in the kind of Eastern Orthodox tradition, which aren't in the Roman Catholic tradition. You know, there's different, you know, different saints and different people who are major figures in, you know, kind of traditional Catholic religion are minor figures in kind of Greek Orthodox kind of traditions and stuff like that. And before we even get into Protestantism and all these other kind of facets. So again, it's a lot of pieces and parts and ideas and concepts and people. I agree with this one century, but then that becomes next century is something else. And then this century is another thing. And the same thing happened in Islam. You know, the same thing happens in Judaism. The same thing happened in Buddhism. So I see like the same kind of critiques that can be levered, if they can be leveraged against things like Islam and Buddhism and Hinduism and all these different things, then I don't see why Christianity shouldn't have the same kind of looked at through that same type of lens.
Yeah, you're right. There's always been a sense of reform. You know, I mean, Jesus himself talked about carrying your cross, you know, deny yourself, follow me. You know, that's not just for the people listening at the time. You know, that's everybody for the last 2,000 years. There's always been this push to develop, to grow, to evolve, like you said. And at the same time, there's always been a continuity, too, from the very first Christians to the present.
So it is kind of amazing, though, when you look across all the religions, how closely they are tied. And I know what you're just saying, how they literally were all tied and they kind of broke apart upon different beliefs. But everything from Buddhism to being a Muslim, like they're all actual figures that are across all of the different religions, which is kind of amazing. Or it's not amazing. It's just, it's an interesting evolution of how that started, because at first glance, we think of these religions as so drastically different. But they're really not.
Yeah, there are differences, but at the core, it's do good and avoid evil. You know, that's the basic, I think, at the heart of just how we know God calls us to be, right? Regardless of where you're from or what you believe. You know, this idea that as a believer, God wants me to be good. You know, I think that's what holds us all together.
You're listening to the Lupe and Royce Show with Lupe Fiasco, Royce da 5'9", and Tom Frank.
Thank you to our sponsor, Mack Weldon, which makes men's essentials like socks, shirts, hoodies, underwear, polos, and active shorts. As you can imagine, I face a lot of pressure to look good showing up alongside these two rappers every week after week. So Mack Weldon is my new go-to for comfort and, more importantly, style. Everything in the Mack Weldon collection mixes and matches seamlessly to fit in with your existing stuff. So do yourself and your closet a favor and check them out. I personally have a few Vesper polos and a black dry knit t-shirt that I'm wearing right now at this very moment, and even some undies. I should also mention the guarantee. Mack Weldon wants you to be comfortable. So if you don't like your first pair of underwear, you can keep them and they're still going to refund you. No questions asked. The Weldon Blue loyalty program is also pretty cool and totally free. Level 1 gets you free shipping for life. And once you spend $200, you reach Level 2 and get 20% off every order for the next year. For 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com/LupeAndRoyce and enter promo code LupeAndRoyce. That's MackWeldon.com/LupeAndRoyce, promo code LupeAndRoyce for 20% off. Mack Weldon, reinventing men's basics.
You're listening to the Lupe and Royce Show with Lupe Fiasco, Royce da 5'9", and Tom Frank.
So back to what we were talking about, how does that story then reflect on, like, kids in our society today, right? I mean, they see this guy who in some ways you could look at. I mean, what was your actual point, Lupe? I guess is that he had a choice to make, right? Whether he continued living or not, in essence. And that's kind of the root of how people might interpret that in a variety of different ways. Did I capture that correctly?
Yeah. I mean, there was decisions that could be made. And I'm saying this, like, he had a value, right? So before you get the death of Jesus, you get the value of Jesus, right? Him bring the greater stuff, right? Him bringing people back to life, him making those delicious fish sandwiches for everybody, right? Turning the water into what, all of that. Like, you get that whole thing, speaking from the cradle, you know, having a certain level of intelligence, this, that, and the third. So he's like the valedictorian and the salutatorian. And he got a 4.8 GPA, and he got scholarships, and he got this, and he got that, right? But he, in the way I look at the story, allows himself to get caught up in a situation that leads to the end of his life, right? Unnecessarily, right? And we've seen that play out. And I'll tell you why I think this is so prevalent and important, Father. Like, that's the same story that's in Boys in the Hood. So a lot of the stories that raised us, you know, as young black men, it wasn't like the Bible, but it was stories that were taken from the Bible. And, you know, a lot of the movies, a lot of the structure of different narratives are pulled from kind of the Bible, because it is the story of our time. Right. Whether it be Noah or it be, you know, Moses, whatever it is, those stories that are in the Bible, right? And specifically the story of Jesus. So when you look at something like Boys in the Hood, you look at something like Minister Society, you look at something where you have these characters who, you know, have all of this potential, right? And they put themselves in circumstances, allow themselves to be influenced in the circumstances, and throw it all away, and it leads to their demise, right? And those are the movies that we're raised on, right? And we just watch these movies, you know, when we come out, like when we watch Juice, right? It wasn't like when you leave out the theater, there's a group of like therapists or analysts there to break down, you know, what this movie really meant and who the characters were and what it stood for and what lesson you should have took. You had people leaving Menace to Society wanting to be Old Dog. You know, you had people leaving Juice wanting to be Bishop. I know this for a fact because my best friend, his name is Bishop, right? He named himself after Tupac in Juice, right? And there was never a real serious kind of critical analysis of what these stories were, who they were, and what their role was, right? And even if you look at something like the church with the story with Jesus, my friends weren't going to church. you know, my grandmother was going to church, but also my grandmother wasn't in the streets. You know what I'm saying? Like the people who were kind of pushed into these spaces, if the church was meant to be the space where you got the critical analysis and you broke down what these stories meant, et cetera, et cetera. And then you apply this to your life. So you understand your value system and then how you employ that value system. They didn't get that. That portion was missing. So when I say that the Jesus story is somewhat unregulated, I look at it the same way that, you know, I look at films like Boys in the Hood, Menace to Society as parallels and extensions of the Jesus story of someone with so much potential who then goes on to sacrifice themselves. Right. Even in the case of Menace to Society, it's the greater good or the greatest good, right? He jumps in front of the bullets that suppose they're going to kill this little boy, right? But in the midst, the only reason you get up to that point in the film where it even happens is because the steps that he took to create that situation, right? For it to happen. And you kind of get like this false hero moment, right? So I think because we have been raised off of that, and then you turn around and you look at the world where, you know, my friends are dead, people are dying every week, people getting shot every week, people getting shot with crucifixes on, people getting their chains took, you know, people dying over this, dying over that. And I try and, you know, think about what is the one narrative that's kind of driving that, that may be subtly behind the scenes, that may be kind of this unconscious thing that everybody's kind of operating off of. And I'll go for the biggest first. The biggest story of the world is the story of Jesus, right? It is unequivocally the biggest story, the biggest narrative that we have on this planet, right? And, you know, that story, and second might be Jesus. I mean, second might be Buddha, right? And then after that might be Muhammad, but it's for sure Jesus, right? And is something about that narrative of all this potential and then, you know, dying young, and then celebrating that death, which kind of, you know, makes me think that there's a little bit more going on beyond just it being a holy kind of situation.
Yeah, well, you know, as we were saying in the beginning of the conversation about the foreshadowing or the prophecy in the Old Testament and Jesus as the sacrifice, you know, it's not so much that he is a victim, but a sacrifice. And all of the miracles lead up to that moment. You know, it's not just the political stuff, you know, riling the Pharisees and you know, turning over tables at the temple. That was, yeah, certainly part of what got him crucified, but he was supposed to die. But we can't ever leave out what happens next, right? The resurrection. You know, and I think sometimes people dismiss that because it's so alien to what we normally experience, right? I can't remember the last time somebody I know was raised from the dead, but Jesus was. And the apostles went to their deaths for that belief, for that faith, you know, and more than belief, for that experience. You know, these guys would not have gone to the length they did for emotion or for, you know, a cause. You know, they did this because this really happened.
Right. And you know, not to beat a dead lamb. That was a bad joke. But not to kick a dead horse. One of the issues with that again is like, and you just said it, you know, like if it's supposed to be resurrection, none of my homies came back to life. You know, I'm still waiting on homies to come back to life. They're not, and they're not coming back to life. You know, there's so much tradition around funerals and stuff like that to get you to let people go, right? Versus kind of hanging on to them like that. And so I don't know anybody that came back to life. Here's the killer though. If Jesus was still here, he could have brought my homies back to life, you know? And it's things like that where it's like, well, I don't, like, how can I get you to not die in the first place? You know? And I think you saw that in some of Jesus's disciples too, right? Like, yo, my man, let's just take some swords in here. Like, if we're going to fight them, let's go fight them. You know, he like, nah, 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 you know, I don't know how in the Quran it goes, what in Islam it goes to the, and let me not say the Quran because it's not necessarily in there, but there's the same way there's kind of apocrypha around the Bible and the Old Testament. There's apocrypha and stuff around the Quran as well, where there was Jesus got swapped out. You know, it was somebody who looked like Jesus, but it wasn't really Jesus. So there's still this kind of like attempt to show like, nah, we didn't really, you know, maybe he shouldn't have died. Maybe there was, you thought that he died, but he didn't. And then also to, you know, there's also something to like, you know, if you can be resurrected, then what's the meaning of life? You know, what's the value of life if I can just come back, you know, and you see people kind of throwing themselves into the fire, with that kind of expectation. And that's great if it's on the other side, but the issue is none of us are on the other side. Right. And so when I look at the world and I see people who choose to remove themselves from it that have a certain value, and I believe everybody has value, and everybody should kind of fight for their life and other folks should fight alongside with them for that. But for it to just be such a casual dismissal of this world, of this material world for the sake of a spiritual world, you know, I just find that that has ramifications that are somewhat underestimated. By folks of, and not even folks that are in clergy, just even the casual person who comes into contact with that story. And I just wish that there was more of I wish the world could stop for a little while, take 2 weeks off, and we really dig into these narratives that kind of run our lives, that people kind of pick. You got rappers running around with, you know, enough diamonds in a Jesus chain to build a real hospital, right? You know, to
not use that as well.
It's over there. I could go put it on if you want me to, Doc. You know what I'm saying? I'll put it on if you need me. You feel me? But I say that to say, with all this kind of religious iconography, that don't know it from, couldn't tell you it, you know, couldn't point out a Bible on a bookshelf, you know? And I think it's that kind of a story that is so important, and if misused or misinterpreted, so dangerous, you know, doesn't get enough of the proper kind of like, whether it be hermeneutical attention or just the narrative, the critical analysis of that narrative, whether it exists, whether the story is real or not, right? Whether it really happened or not, whether Jesus actually, he did, everything happened and it was like X-Men and it really happened, right? And fine. Even with that said, you know, that story over time, you know, to be so powerful, to be so important, to be so dangerous, for it not to get the type of real serious critical analysis, especially if in the face of the crises that we're facing in our communities. I think that, you know, I'm going to put it on the church, man. I think the church needs to kind of step, the church as a whole need to kind of step up, you know, and do that work, man, for real.
You know, that's actually probably the main reason why I responded, you know, when I saw the last podcast. And I was like, and you actually asked for a theology major, so I'm like, all right, I kind of think I qualify, because, you know, you're talking about the stories, you know, you're talking about the movies like Juice and Boys in the Hood, but even so many albums, so much music, this story gets repeated, you know, rappers. I remember being in the seminary thinking about this. Rappers are like priests, right? Like, you guys have this platform, and the ones who use it right, like you know, guys who want to put beauty in the world, you know, poetry, I mean, the cool, that's like poetry. So when you guys do that, that inspires people, that touches hearts, right? That's what I want to do as a priest. It's different, of course, I'm not going to get up there and rap, but when I talk about Jesus, it's not reminding people of some guy who died 2,000 years ago, but my closest friend, you know, the Lord, like Lord, not in the like a servile sense, but like, yeah, he's the master and I'm the disciple, you know, like we have this relationship. And I think that's at the heart of real Christianity. You know, it's about this engagement, like I was saying before, with Jesus.
Lou, do you have any songs that dive into religion that I wouldn't have known by on the surface?
Yeah, man. My whole album, Tetsuo and Youth. So there's like that.
It's I bring up an underlying religious.
Yeah, the whole it's a kind of an underlying religious theme in there, and touching on some religious pieces. So I try and like, you know, I really love Catholic art, because mm-hmm. it's so rich in the, you know, the metaphors and the imagery. So I try and like create songs that riff off of certain art pieces, you know, so, or certain circumstances that occur in the Bible. So like the Dormination, you know, or like the Epiphany, you know,
the Last Supper,
did that one. Those moments. And I try and bring them into, you know, our reality, you know? So I did a song called Madonna, and Other Mothers in the Hood, on Tetsuo on Youth. I also did a song called Deliver, where it was Madonna specifically was kind of riffing off, you know, Boys in the Hood, you know, this character who has all this stuff going for him. And, you know, everybody kind of comes back to their mom. And that's why the story of Jesus is so crazy, right? Single mother, right? The father's around, but he's not there, right?
And then, we got St. Joseph.
You got Joseph, but you know, Joseph wasn't his daddy though, man. He was a stepdad.
He stepped up. He took care of the Holy Family. Now, you're right, though. At the end of Jesus' life, he's not there. And so the presumption is that he died at some point before that. But not to interrupt you. Go on.
No, that's cool. If you look at a lot of the scenes, you know, especially in Catholicism, Joseph is kind of there, but it's primarily Jesus and Mary, right? If I'm not mistaken, right? A heavy mm-hmm. fixture on those two figures, right? Father figure kind of not there. Jesus has to become the man, you know, the man of the household. If that household is the world, if you want to use that metaphor, but he has to grow up. He has to become a man early. So even if you look at a lot of the old Catholic paintings of Jesus, where he's kind of like they call it a homunculus or something like that, where there's this question like, why is baby Jesus so ugly in all that old art, right? Because they try to figure out how to make a baby look like a man, right? So that was kind of like a issue, right? And
you're saying that's why the baby Jesus was ugly, because they were trying to make it look more like a man?
Yeah. No, that's a serious thing in art. Like that how do you present Jesus? Do you present him as a baby, just as a pure baby? Or is there like, how do you present God? Right. And so they had like, just like follow the narratives, right? You got a young boy forced to be in a position of a man before his time. Right. What does that sound like? Right. You got
every Disney film that's ever been made.
You got a single parent home, right? For the most part, at least as it's portrayed. And then you get a dude who gets caught up with the law, being a rebel, who gets arrested and gets executed, right? By the police, right?
So now that you say it like that, there are some similarities.
That's what the song Madonna on my album is about. Right. It's referencing that story because when you take that story and put it back in the hood, it makes perfect sense. So it becomes, whose narrative is that the most healthy narrative that we should be following? Is there another aspect of Jesus' narrative that should be put more on Front Street, that should be put more into the perspective of the public persona, especially because the Catholic Church is so intentional in the marketing of Jesus, the promotion and marketing of Jesus. So those paintings, you know, in St. Peter's and at the Basilica and all that, you know, those were billboards at one point in time. That was the billboard for Jesus. That was the billboard for the religion. That was the marketing for it. It's like, you see, I'm kind of getting that, Tom, like there is that, there's a responsibility in the church of how Jesus was presented, and then what aspect of Jesus was the most kind of energy and literal money was spent, right, to create that particular version of Jesus. And is there a more, you know, just from my point of view, is there a more positive, you know, face of Jesus, a positive narrative somewhere in the Jesus story that should get more of the promotion? right? That should get more of the paintings of, you know, the more things that all don't land into, you know, this dude, exactly what I said, basically, you know, living, getting in trouble.
Well, this is where
getting killed.
Yeah, right. You got to remember what happens in those churches where all these beautiful paintings are, right? What's going on there? The mass, you know, and this is one of the things that makes Catholics different from lots of other Christians, although not entirely. But when we, as a priest, stand at the altar, right, and we say what Jesus said at the Last Supper, I mean, we have readings from the Bible just like they did, and then we take bread and wine, right, we say what Jesus said. And as a Catholic, I believe that that actually becomes his body and blood. So yeah, he died on the cross 2,000 years ago. He also rose from the dead 3 days later. But all of that came after the Last Supper, where he told his apostles, do this in memory of me. It was his way of staying with us, you know. So we have all that beautiful art in these churches because those are reminders of the stories that we're listening to. You know well that for most of history, a lot of people were illiterate. You know, no, the world has never been as literate as it is now. And so people could visualize the stories they were listening to because they couldn't read it in a Bible. But then what happens after meditation on the word is meditation on the word made flesh, right? The body of Christ. And so that's how he remains with us. You know, so we don't see it as somebody who got killed, you know, and that's it, you know, like everybody else, right? But as somebody who willingly or allowed it to happen, right? Because he could have escaped any time. He could have swapped with somebody, right? If that was really the point, but that's not. The point is for him to be the sacrifice, right? The you know, the one that is given over and given up for us. So all the miracles that he performed in life, the feeding, the healing, those were signs of what his church was supposed to do spiritually, as well as physically, right? With all of the food pantries, like my own parish here at St. Rose, you know, we never stopped during the pandemic. People were coming twice a week to get food. And that was a very real participation in the multiplication of the loaves and the fishes, right? You know, people were coming to be fed from the house of God, right? That's how this is supposed to work. And not just here, obviously, right? But every place with the means to do it has a responsibility just as a human being to serve. That's why I really love your point when you were talking about suicide counseling, encouraging people to do service, you know, to help one another, because that's, for a lot of people, that's the spark that they need, that connection, and also that value, you know, of putting something good in the world that wasn't there before you did it. That's a powerful thing.
It's an interesting thing that when you look, because I was raised Catholic, so I went to you know, church every Sunday growing up, and when you look back on it, most of what I remember is focusing on the death rather than on the life and all of the good. And in some ways, that's kind of like, I look back at my own kind of relationship with religion. And that's, I think, one of the parts that kind of always kind of drove me away a little bit, is so much focus was on the negative of what happened and not on the positive and how much he actually did for people. And I don't know, like, it just doesn't seem the way that, like, even a mass flows, that we focus enough on all the powerful positive messaging that occurs. How do you react to that?
Yeah, that's part of the issue there, I think, is presentation. You know, priests were all different, and we're going to emphasize certain things or celebrate the mass in a certain way. And I think what people come away with can also be subjective, you mm-hmm. know, but that's why the focus on the death of our Lord is always with the understanding, the caveat, that that's not the end of the story. You know, that yeah. For us, yeah, on this side of things, death is so final, it's so alienating, it's such a separation, and so painful. You know, you probably heard in the news about that young boy who was killed. You know, he was shot over a parking space, right? There's some dispute between families. That was like a mile from here, you know? And so that kind of experience can shake you. And you bring that heartache, right, that we all feel when we hear stories like that, to God. And we look to the cross, and suddenly Jesus on the cross is not just a nice work of art anymore. You know, this is a mirror. You know, this is how I feel sometimes, you know. And that's a powerful thing too, the link to human suffering, you know, that the cross represents. I think that's part of why the emphasis in your experience, Tom, was on the death of our Lord. Because, I mean, not only is it central to what we believe, but it's also inescapable for us, right? The suffering and the death that is around us and that awaits us, right? Because we're all going that way. We don't have to be afraid or consumed by the fear and the unknowability.
Royce, you had a song, Father Figure, right? Which I think has some kind of religious ties to it in a way. What's your take on some of this? Like you've been kind of quiet, but I know that you think about this kind of stuff a lot.
I was going to ask if you guys thought that rappers, celebrities, you know, the new people of today with platforms, do you think that those people or us are the new unintentional, undervalued leaders, or for lack of a better term, messiahs? Like, do you think the kids are influenced by us before they're influenced by a particular religion? Or they're put in a position to where they can be properly educated the way that Lou feels like that they need to be?
You know, the guys I grew up listening to, I mean, I can remember as a kid loving Wu-Tang like crazy. I had a vinyl sticker, a Wu-Tang sticker in the window of our first floor apartment. All my friends knew where I lived because of that sticker. It was like the bat signal, you know. And listening to those guys, there's the fun wordplay, right? The genius lyrics, but there's always the social commentary. There's always the like tears, right? You know that a song like that where like RZA is just practically crying in the song. That's a powerful thing, you know. And I mean, and like I said before, you guys have done similar stuff just in terms of the emotion and the artistry of it. So yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, I wouldn't say messiah, but definitely teachers. Or at least you have the potential to be that, you know. But like I said, not everybody does that, as you guys know. You know, guys like you, guys like Blue, you know, create beautiful narratives. And beauty is, for me, another name for Jesus, right? Truth, goodness, beauty, that's all divine. You know, so when that's in your music and it's evident, that's convincing, inspiring, and powerful. Royce, you had a song, I mean, a lot of songs, but in Book of Ryan, you did a song called Power, right? The song about your dad. I was like floored. I still get teary-eyed sometimes listening, especially as you build up to the end. So that's like a real emotional kind of narrative. But then you have a song like Amazing on that same album where you're talking about your childhood and that motif of the ball. I'm like, this is just beautiful writing, you know, and it sounds great because the beat is dope. So like, yeah, I think you guys who are talented in the way that you are in a medium that's popular, yeah, you have great potential to teach our kids. Talib, Mostef, all these guys, you know, I grew up on that and being inspired by that.
Yeah, I think more artists and celebrities should embrace the responsibility that comes along with having a platform. Maybe even if it's not, it doesn't necessarily have to be through your music if you're like a singer or a rapper, but just through your platform in general.
Yeah, you don't have
it
to
be something that you're saying.
Like I said,
it could be something that you're saying in a YouTube clip. It could be something that you're doing in the community. It could be something intentional that you do. It could be your actions that just kind of balances out whatever your content may be. If it's, you know,
make something beautiful. Make something beautiful. I mean, that's the gift God gave you guys, to make beautiful art. You know, like and you've done it, and you'll keep doing it. I hope. You know, I can't wait to hear what you guys are working on. But in terms of this, again, participation with the divine, being inspired, and then putting out beauty, whether it's an act of service or a classic album, this is, that can be transformational. That can be, like I said, inspirational, because you were inspired when you made it. I think that's, if more artists and celebrities could be true to themselves in that way, I think that could be a really powerful thing.
Yeah, I feel like when there's an artist that makes a piece of art that resonates with a whole lot of different kind of people, like around the world, to me, that's in the realm of being like ordained. You know, to me, Tupac was ordained. He was ordained. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, some people just get it at too early of an age. What was he, 24 when he passed?
Is it?
24?
It was something crazy like that. I don't know exactly.
Sheesh.
Yeah. I had some issues with him calling a song Hail Mary. But other than that, you know, I was a fan too.
Yeah. Pop said, like, he said he got some choice words for Tupac when he see him on the side, Pac. You hear him, Pac? He over here talking about you, Pac. So make sure you look out for Father Rodriguez when he meets you on the side, Pac. He said y'all need to holler at each other.
Pray for me so that I get there, please.
Man, so Father Rodriguez, thank you for coming in here and blessing us with your presence and your insight, man. You're doing great stuff in the community, brother. Appreciate you dearly. And man, thank you for the information and coming in and sticking up for some Jesus. I think Jesus appreciates.
You know,
this was great. I felt like I was a part of the congregation. I was just sitting here learning.
You're always welcome. And my parish is right by the beach here in Rockaway. So anytime you're in the neighborhood, come by. Lupe, I want to check you out. You have the show in Brooklyn in December, right? You have two shows, I think.
Yeah, man, you're more than welcome.
I really want to. I really want to go. Food and Liquor is such a great album.
Listen, but you only could bring like one person, man. Don't be coming in there with like three preachers, six nuns. Yeah, be outside. They're going to be outside. Just letting you know, okay? We got enough room for like one or two of y'all. Don't go crazy with it. But we'd love to see you at the show, Father.
I don't think I'll be dressed like this, but I'll definitely.
No, come like that. What are you talking about? Like that. What are you talking about? What?
You're the star. I don't want
to. Nah, bruh. No, man, you the star. You the star. What you talking about?
Superstar, another great song. As I was, you know, getting nervous about meeting you guys today and talking like this, all your songs, all these great, great pieces of music, like, were bouncing around in my head. Royce, I don't know if you remember, you had a song, King of Kings. You know, it's like, from the perspective of Jesus. I mean, the beat is crazy, but the flow, like, always really great stuff. And Lupe, your concepts and your, again, the poetry, songs like The Cool and then The Coolest, oh man, that stuff really moved me as just somebody who likes hip-hop a lot, loves it, but also attracted to, you know, real art, and that's what you guys do. So just wanted to thank you for that. I also saw your you did that video in LA, where you did Food and Liquor live. Oh, that was so cool. It was awesome.
Oh, wow. Listen, you did that. Father has put some money in our collection plates, Royce. He has donated to the Church of Royce and Lupe, man. Oh, man, we appreciate that.
I'll keep doing it.
You better swing by St. Rose and put a little something in his.
I'm humble, man.
You're always welcome here. Yeah, that would be nice. Thanks, Tom. but yeah, no, you guys, it's all for the church, right? Not me. But I do, like I said, just wanted to take the opportunity to thank you for giving me this opportunity, but also to thank you for what you do for the world's culture and adding beauty to the world. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Doc.
Thank you, Father.
We appreciate you coming on. So that's
much love and respect,
Father James Rodriguez at St. Rose. So thank you, and keep up the good work.
Awesome. You too. Thanks so much.
You're listening to The Lupe and Royce Show with Lupe Fiasco, Royce the 5'9", and Tom Frank.
Hey, fellas, if you're still looking for something with 0 grams of sugar, be sure to check out our sponsor, Magic Spoon. Plus, if you take their cocoa cereal and their peanut butter cereal, you mix them together, it tastes exactly like a peanut butter cup. So go to magicspoon.com/LupeandRoyce to grab a custom bundle of cereal and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code, Lupe and Royce, at checkout to save $5 off your next order.
You're listening to The Lupe and Royce Show with Lupe Fiasco, Royce the 5'9", and Tom Frank.
I think I was right about most of my things.
You were not. You didn't even know what you was talking about, Tom. You
33 years flailing. Old. Thank you, Royce, for bringing that up.
That's the, I don't, greatest. Listen, man. People can say all kinds of stuff. Royce, how old are you?
43.
Exactly. Royce is at least 50. But you see how he just threw that 43 out there? So, and thought we wasn't going to catch it? Yeah. People can say anything, man.
That was good. I appreciated him coming on.
For sure. I'm 50.
You're 50?
Get rich or die trying, 50.
Look, now we need to get a... Now we need to get a...
Time to get that one, boy. That's wordplay. Woo!
You're a genius.
A devil worship on here now, Tom. So go to the That's Church next? Of Satan. Yeah, see if we can get
All
a
right,
devil worship.
All right, so if there is... If the Church of Satan pastors out there, the please... Devil.
Do you want God,
to
worship
we need
the
to
devil?
Balance out all that good. Yeah, man. You know how I think we should balance out all that good? With some of that evil money. Put some of that in the collection plate, because money is the root of all evil.
Love of money is the root of all evil. So, wow. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, ain't nothing really else to say. This is it's been Lupe Fiasco, and I feel quite holy right now.
This is Royce the 5'9", and my brother Lupe Fiasco was quite ordained this episode. It's on you, Tom.
This is Tom Frank, the regular guy. I feel somewhat spiritual today. I feel clean. I feel cleansed. I feel good.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system.
Hey, what's going on, Lupe, Royce, and Tom? This is Rashad Williams out of Memphis, Tennessee, the 901. Just want to touch on that topic, that Jesus topic, man. Lupe, that was an insane parallel to kind of go in as a person who thinks in that somewhat in that capacity. I really like that. I like that parallel. I like the answers and responses from Royce and Tom. That's really, really cool. If y'all want to dive into that a little bit more on the next episode, please feel free. I will be tuning in. But that's a real concept, you know, especially since you guys are, I mean, I don't know how old you guys are really, but just to add this as a twist, I mean, all of you guys are technically by age older than Jesus Christ. So technically there's a level of experience that you guys have that Jesus never got, to pay into the Lupe Fiasco's, parallel and what we're supposed to be doing. So I noticed the voicemail. I can't go too long, but man, appreciate you guys. And what an amazing show. Appreciate you.
Yo, what's up, Lupe and Royce? This is Tristan calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Yo, y'all show is mad funny. And yo, Tom is mad funny too. He's very instrumental to the show. Low key, y'all should probably rename the show to The Tom Show featuring Lupe and Royce the 5'9". Nah, I'm just playing with y'all. All right, I can't wait to catch the next ones. All right, peace.
What's up, the good people at the Lupe and Royce show? And Tom, this is David. I've been a longtime fan. I'm a previous immigrant from Cameroon in West Africa. Moved here not a long time ago and suddenly became a citizen. I'm a big fan of yours, Lupe. Been listening to your music, The Cool, Food and Liquor. I don't even know how long, man. And Voice, I've been a big time fan since Bad Meets Evil. I'm 22, so I kind of got put on a little later, but I've become a big fan ever since. Tom Frank, doing a great job mediating the podcast. I love listening to y'all. Y'all really push out some good content. I really like that conversation about Jesus that y'all recently just had. That was one of my favorite episodes. Man, I just listened to this. I'm moving right now, so I was just listening to it while I'm moving some stuff into some boxes. Yeah, the Jesus story is just very interesting, and everybody knows about it from whatever continent you're from, and it's influenced us so much that every time I make a decision, it's crazy. I think about Jesus, and it's like he's there with me whenever I make a decision, whether it's good or bad. I feel like I don't have to worry about it much because Jesus is right there. You know, I'm not like a big religious person. I'm still trying to figure some things out, but I love Jesus, man. And I love listening to y'all. So y'all keep pushing the good content, and we'll be listening. Thank you.
That's our show for the week. If you like what you heard, be sure to subscribe or follow. Leave us a review and tell your friends to listen. The Lupe and Royce Show is a production of Say What Media. It's recorded and mixed by Claude Jennings. Our head writer is Lauren Sloat. I'm Tom Frank. And our theme music is by, who else? Lupe Fiasco and Royce the 5'9".